First up this morning, we have a public hearing on House Bill 3181, and I'm going to open a public hearing on that. And Ellen, if you would please give us a brief summary of that bill.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. House Bill 3181 declares the state of Oregon to be a public employer of family child care providers for the purposes of collective bargaining laws. It declares these providers to be public employees that are governed by collective bargaining laws, and it divides the providers into two bargaining groups, certified and registered family child care providers and family child care providers who are not required to be certified or registered but who receive a child care subsidy from the state, and these are known as exempt providers. It recognizes AFSCME as a representative for the certified and registered family child care providers and SEIU as the representative for exempt providers.
Thank you, Ellen. And we're fortunate to have Representative Kotek with us this morning. If you please come forward. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Nice to see you all again.
Yes.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, and for the record, my name is Tina Kotek. I'm the state representative for House District 44, which is most of North Portland and Northeast Portland, home to thousands of working families with child care needs and hundreds of providers who are trying to meet their needs. And I'm very pleased to be here today to support House Bill 3181. This is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation I think we're going to look at this session, because one of the things we haven't done well in the state is focus on our child care system and make the appropriate investments. I was before you a couple weeks ago talking about other bills around child care. It's one of my favorite topics, because not only is it about early care and education, it's about supporting our workforce. And what this bill will do is give a very much needed voice to our family providers, our family friends and neighbor providers who are providing that very much needed child care for our working families in the state. One of the reasons I'm very supportive of this bill is, to be very honest, this is a women's issue. Most of the providers out there are women. Most of the folks who are off in the workforce needing child care are working women. And I think we have, like I said, not made the proper investments in our system. Many of you know that I've been a child advocate for many years. Back in 2003, when I started my job as policy director at Children First for Oregon, one of my first jobs was to work on our annual data book, and the theme that year was family financial stability. And the topic I decided to look into was child care. I was appalled by what I found in terms of where we are in this state compared to other states in our subsidy program, the program that we've set up to help working families stay working. Our co-pays are too high for our parents. They have a very difficult time reaching them. Many of you know that we have a benchmark in this state that to provide affordable child care to families, affordable is defined as 10% of income. Some of our co-pays are as high as 25% of income, clearly not affordable. We're also required through our subsidy program to provide access to the market. That means, under federal guidelines, providing a subsidy rate, a reimbursement to our child care providers through our program that would allow families to reach at least 75% of the market. We're around 25% of the market, according to our reimbursement rates. And finally, we're not helping families at higher incomes. Because of budget cuts, we've really scaled back our program in a way that makes it very difficult for families who make just a little too much money to get any help, and therefore their child care costs are really very daunting. Again, this bill is important because it provides that organizing voice to our child care providers that we have been lacking, primarily because child care providers are very busy folks, and this is a way for them to unify their issues and their voice. I also have today, for the record, a letter from One Voice for Child Care, which is a statewide coalition of child care advocates, providers, have copies for you. They are supportive of this. It's because there's a very sincere understanding that unless we give the tools to our providers to have those discussions with the state and, frankly, the entire public community about what child care does, why it's important, it's going to be very difficult to move forward in making increased investments. Finally, the last thing I would want to say is, why is it that important to support the folks who are providing the child care? You know, we get very focused on the quality of child care for families. I would argue that the stability of the child care workforce, Their ability to get extra training and education is absolutely essential for the quality of the care that we want our working families to have access to. We know that if child care providers have increased professional development, access to training, they are more likely to stay in the job, create it as a career that they can stay in, and provide higher quality care. This bill will help focus those efforts. And by providing stronger reimbursement rates and lower co-pays, you won't see parents churning in and out of child care providers, therefore providing more stability to the kid. And ultimately, that is what we're striving for. Greater stability with that quality child care provider is what is going to benefit our children as they move into the K-12 system and beyond. So with that, I'm happy to take questions. There are, I'm sure, experts who could get into the details, but I just want to thank you for hearing the bill. I urge you to support it. Move it quickly. This is a very important piece of legislation. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Kotek. It is indeed a very important piece of legislation. Representative Dahlem.
Thank you. And Representative Kotek, if you would not mind, I need a child care 101 program. And I'm going to explain to you what I understand. Parents are working, and it's expected that they would pay 10% of their income as a guideline for child care. We're way in excess of that. We're at 10%. Where does, if parents are working for $10 an hour and it's 10% of their income, generally figuring, then they're paying $1 an hour for child care, how does one get into the program so that you make up the difference? How does that work?
Chair Witt, Representative Dahlem, that's an excellent question. Couple points. I honestly don't know how some parents do it, because if they have the income that allows them to be eligible for our employment-related daycare program, but they're at maybe the higher income levels in that range, their copays are very high. So often what happens is the provider is either giving them a pass, is making up that gap for them. There are folks who don't stay in the program. We have a problem in the state that there's a lot of cycling on and off the program every 3 or 4 months. It's because of the inability to make the copays, I would argue. And so you're forcing parents to go after maybe unstable care, relying on the kindness of strangers or their family to provide that child care. When you add up the numbers, it's really kind of hard to understand how parents can do it. If they're on the program, it's the help they need to find a provider. And we have made a choice in this state not to create a waiting list. We've made a choice to have a very underinvested program, saying that we'll serve more people, but it's kind of unknown on how well the program is functioning because the reimbursement rates are so low, the copays are so high. I would argue if we invest better in that program, and this is the opportunity to do that, not only with this bill but some of the budget recommendations that are going forth, we will strengthen the program in a way that families can stay with the providers that they need, because the reimbursement rates will be stronger, the copays will be lower. But the math is challenging. I think it's really every family has an individual story on how they do it. But many providers really are making up the slack, and oftentimes they're low income themselves, and I think that's an unfair situation to ask them to make up what we ought to be doing as a public investment. Does that help?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Additional questions? Representative Kotek, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
Next, I'd like to call up Ken Allen and Leslie Frain, please. And I understand at least one of you has another hearing immediately.
I do. Thanks. So. Thank you. My name is Ken Allen. I'm the Executive Director of AFSCME Council 75. We represent more than 27,000 people in Oregon, and AFSCME Child Care Providers Together is one of our newest affiliates. Our child care providers are the certified registered providers doing in-home care for thousands of Oregon families. We spent the last 2.5 years working with the providers. We knocked on thousands of doors and organized the providers into our local 132. The governor agreed to bargain with AFSCME as the provider's advocate over state regulations, subsidies paid to providers taking care of children from low-income families, and the ways the state agencies interact with the providers. And I don't want to repeat what Representative Kotek said, but we are absolutely the lowest in the country. We're 50th in the country in the subsidy rate. The state of Idaho pays approximately $100 per month per child more than we do in Oregon, and that's an embarrassment to our state. AFSCME and DHS and CCD bargained over these issues for 9 months. We agreed on raising the subsidy rates to the 75th percentile. We agreed on lowering the co-pays for low-income parents, and we agreed to raise the eligibility levels. We also agreed on a provider bill of rights, and we agreed on many other items. During the 9 months, we worked out an excellent relationship between the union and the agencies and the providers and agency managers. We worked out many issues that had been ignored for years, and I have to tell you, in my 33 years' experience of bargaining, this is one of the most productive sets of bargaining I've ever done, and it's an extremely positive relationship. And the providers finally have a voice that they've never had through the two union organizations. The governor has issued a new executive order that calls for full-scope collective bargaining between the state agencies and our union on behalf of certified registered providers. This bill would simply put that executive order into the statute and recognize that family child care providers need to be able to bargain to continue to establish the decent conditions that will enable them to have a productive future. Thank you. And I'll answer any questions that you have, too.
Thank you very much, Ken. And Leslie, with your indulgence, we'll ask questions now so that Ken can get on to his next hearing. Committee members.
I do have.
Yes, Representative Dolan.
Ken, did you come to a formula for the parent share and the state share? Did you arrive at a formula that you thought was fair that would protect a working family? Did you do that?
Yeah, actually the 75th percentile is a federal goal that the subsidy rate is supposed to match what the private market charges at the 75th percentile. And we looked at those numbers. They're divided by geography based on the market, and there's a market study done every 2 years. And we looked at those numbers, and that's what we agreed to. We would try to achieve that 75th percentile. It would put us, and we talked a lot about this at the bargaining table, in many respects, historically, we've tried to be kind of in the middle of the pack in this country, workers' compensation rates, those unemployment rates. It would put us in the middle of the pack rather than 50th in the country, and it would provide that kind of subsidy that working families could use and not have to pay, 15-20% of their income towards child care.
If I'm a provider and I have my home set up and I participate with the state, what rate would I get? 75% is 70. What does that bring to the provider? What's the dollar figure?
I don't know the exact figure, but because it's different, there's three different geographic areas, and this is all on charts. I think it'd be between the new rates would be between $300 and $400. It's also dependent on whether it's an infant, preschooler. There's different levels. You get compensated at different levels for different age children.
Okay, we'll set the parameters. We'll make a three-year-old. I'm going to bring my 3 year old to the provider, and I want to know what I'm going to pay and what the government's going to pay. And in about, I know you don't have the.
Yeah, I don't have the exact figures. There'll be some people from the state that can testify and give you the exact figures this.
Are they coming?
Let's see here. Do we have anyone from the state?
You could get that from either DHS or CCD, the exact
where I'm going.
Current and what this would involve.
We can certainly ask for that information, Representative Bell.
Thank you. And I'll tell you where I'm going with this. We, at this end of the table, at the other end of the table, we talk about living wage jobs. And I can't get there unless I have some notion of what the parent's going to pay, what the state's going to pay, and what the provider is going to be able to load. Can they have 10 in their daycare, 5 in their daycare? And where I'm going with this is I want to put my arms around some kind of a figure for a living wage. So that's the information I'm trying to dig out.
We can make copies of this and get it to you. There's a chart that shows those rates.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Additional questions? Representative Colby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Allen, thank you for coming here today.
It's sure.
A really important area that we have to talk about, you know, making sure that working families can take care of their kids while they're at work, just fundamental. One of the questions that I guess pops into my mind, I'm reading some of the information about, you know, some of the laws we've already enacted about the requirements we have on the people that take care of our children out there through the child care providers. I'm curious about, you know, is there a problem with that workforce, you know, historically of maintaining a consistent workforce? And what are their pay? What's the average pay for a child care provider? Because it seems like we're requiring quite a bit of educational and training requirements of them, and I'm just wondering how difficult it is to maintain that kind of a workforce with the wage levels.
I think one of the biggest issues is the adequacy of the training for the providers and the turnover and the providers, because the amount that they can make isn't enough, and it does vary by community. And in low income communities, where the providers are serving mostly, you know, very low income folks, many of these providers don't charge the copay. They just go with the subsidy amount, so it's very inadequate amount. So the lack of good training and then the lack of adequate compensation creates a turnover that isn't good for the communities. And, you know, this is a hidden part of our economy. Many times these homes are in your neighborhood. You don't even know somebody's providing child care, and they're taking care of, in our case, 10 to 12 children so that five or six families can be working. And you don't know, you know, that's going on in your community. And it's a good thing, but and our economy couldn't continue without these providers taking care of the children.
Additional questions? Ken, thank you very,
thank you.
Very much. Appreciate that. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning. Thank you, Representative Witt and members of the committee, for giving us this opportunity to share our thoughts with you. My name is Leslie Frayne, and I serve as Executive Director of SEIU Local, Local 503. Our union represents 40,000 members in Oregon, including 5,000 license-exempt family child care providers. I'm here today to ask for your support for House Bill 3181, a bill that would codify the terms of Governor Kulongoski's executive order granting collective bargaining rights to family child care providers. The 5,000 license-exempt child care providers in our union provide high-quality care in their homes for three or fewer children at a time. They provide care at all hours of the day and night, on weekdays and weekends. Without the services of our members, there are many low-income parents who would be unable to continue working because child care would become unaffordable, unavailable, or both. For the child care workers themselves, making ends meet is challenging. Even when they care for the maximum of three kids, license-exempt providers earn below minimum wage. They have neither health insurance nor workers' compensation coverage. They have no paid sick days, and it has been over a decade since the hourly subsidy rates paid by the state have increased. Technically, in addition to the subsidy, providers receive a copayment from the parents, but in reality, so few parents can afford this expense that the copays are commonly called no-pays. I want to go off script for a minute and talk a little bit about numbers. For the license-exempt providers, they're maxed at three children at a time unless they're siblings. So for most, we're talking about three kids. And in terms of how much they actually get, as Ken said, it depends on the age of the child and what part of the state that you're in. But typically, if you're in Salem caring for a toddler, the amount is currently about $1.70 per child per hour. So that means if you take care of the maximum of three, you're supposed to get three times $1.70 is $5.20. I can't do the math right. $5.10, right?
$5.10.
But the problem with that is that assumes that you get the copay, because that $1.70 includes both the state's share and the family's share. So if the parent of the children that you're caring for is at the higher end of the sliding scale, and they're expected to pay a significant copay. Instead of getting 510, what you may, and you don't get it because most of our providers will tell you that it's hit or miss, but more often they don't. It would be reasonable to expect, depending upon the amount of that copay, that we're actually talking about something closer to $4 than $5.10. And out of that $4, that's not just wages, because out of that you have to pay for all of your supplies, meals for the children, and so forth. So depending upon what those end up costing, for our providers, half of minimum wage is not an unrealistic estimate to consider as a ballpark of what folks are making. And remember that if a child is sick and doesn't come that day, you don't get to pay for that child that day, even though you were expecting it. So that's just a ballpark of what licensed providers are looking at if they take care of the maximum number of children. And those are Salem area numbers. The Portland area numbers are a little bit higher. The rest of the state is a little bit lower. 2 years ago, when child care workers in Oregon began talking about forming a union, the conversations always seemed to begin the same way. The providers talked about how they love the kids they care for, how proud they are of providing safe, secure, and reliable care. They talked about the joys of watching kids thrive and grow, of helping them with school readiness. Finally, they talked about how forming a union would give them an opportunity to improve the child care program, to gain training, and to make enough economic progress for themselves that they could afford to continue doing the work that they love. On behalf of these providers, I want to thank Governor Kulongoski, whose executive order granting collective bargaining rights to family child care providers represents a huge stride toward providing the voice our members are seeking. But by their very nature, executive orders are temporary fixes. That's why this bill is so important. If passed, it will give these providers, like other workers, the security of knowing that their rights are protected by statute. It will also codify parents' absolute right to select the qualified provider of their choice, be that a grandparent or neighbor or a center-based program. It will prohibit strikes, since strikes have no place in the family child care program. The governor's executive order started us down the right path. I'm proud to report that we've made further progress down that path by reaching an historic first agreement with the state of Oregon. If funded by this legislature, this agreement will reduce the copays charged to parents by 20%. It will expand access to the child care program by increasing parents' income eligibility limit to 185% of the federal poverty level. Currently, it's 150%. It will provide significant funding for training for license-exempt providers. And finally, it will increase the subsidy rates for a provider in the Salem area who cares for three children to $6.60 an hour if they get the copays, with Portland providers earning $7.92 an hour. Through the budget process, this legislature will decide whether to fund our settlement. But for the future of child care, in many ways, this bill is as important as the budget process. Okay. Its passage will make it possible for providers to continue to work collectively to reduce turnover, to improve quality, to advocate for the kids that they care for, and to professionalize the work that they do, day in and day out, to protect and to nurture our children. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Dahlem?
Do you know the budget figure set aside for the copay in the governor's budget? Do you know how much that is?
I don't. The amount, the increase for the ERDC program is, Abby, help me out. This is Abby Solomon, who's our field coordinator for child care, and if you don't mind, she's more familiar with the numbers.
The line items aren't separated, so in the budget they have three pieces, which include raising the subsidy rates up to the 75th percentile for the certified registered providers. License-exempt providers would receive 88% of the 75th percentile, includes a reduction on average of 20% of the copayments, and restoring the income eligibility, which used to be at 185% and was cut back to 150% of the poverty level. That total package is all included together in one line item that was in the governor's budget, $35 million, and was reduced by $17.5 million in the co-chair's budget. So we'd really like to see that money restored. That money was come to through a process that included, you know, the folks here that Kenton talked about, the folks with AFSCME, the folks with SEIU, folks from DHS, from Department of Employment, advocates, the governor's office, after a long process of about 9 months of working together and really weighing out all of the different issues, looking at our market rate studies, looking at all the information that we had. And that was a place that everyone felt really good about in coming forward to the legislature to talk about. So we are concerned about those cuts.
And to be sure that I understand, the governor's budget had $35 million. The co-chair's budget has $17.5 million. And with the, when you gave us the figures of $5.10 an hour in the Salem area and reducing parents' participation and increasing government's participation, that was predicated on the governor's budget.
No, the $5.10 was based on what the current subsidy rates are. That same provider, if the agreement that we reached is funded, if the governor's budget allocation is retained in the budget, then there would be enough money to increase that $5.10 number to the $6.60 number. If the co-chair's number is adopted, we will not be able to get to the $6.60 number. There simply isn't enough dollars in the item for that. And so presumably if that happens, we would have to go back to the bargaining table and start bargaining over again, because the dollars won't be there for the agreement that we reached that would have gotten that hypothetical provider to $6.60.
Can I have a follow-up,
please?
Let's go back to the provider again. At even at $6.60 an hour, and with children drop-in basis and snacks and the things that a person has to have, this isn't done to provide an income. This is done as a service to friends and family.
Some of each, and we're going to have some of our providers testify in a little while, and they are probably more qualified than I am to address that. But in some cases, you'll hear that some of them are grandparents taking care of their grandchildren, because otherwise their kids couldn't afford to stay in the workforce. And in some cases, it is women who take care of their children because they can't afford to go out to work, but then we'll take in a neighbor's children as well. And so, but I don't think we've done a study to say, is this the primary family income source for the majority of our members? But anecdotally, I'm very clear that this is what our members are living on. And the conditions that they live under are very difficult. The lack of health insurance obviously creates the problems that all uninsured folks have, but when you're caring for small children, you get sick more. When you don't have sick days and you don't have health insurance, you continue to work sick. It's a very challenging life that our members live. We feel like the tentative contract that we've reached, if funded, would be a step in the right direction toward bringing people out of poverty, but we will still have a long ways to go.
Thank you, Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, I spent some time visiting with some of these folks in my district, and I can tell you that they're doing a great service for almost nothing, and they're to be commended. I'm very appreciative that the governor did the executive order and got this started, but our work is to continue that, and I think we need to do it. There's only one thing about this bill that bothers me a lot, and that's that somehow my name didn't get on it.
Mine did.
Good for you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much, Chair Wade. I don't think my name got on there too either. That's much the problem. I'm sorry, I had to go to all the committee meetings to testify, but I didn't hear all the testimony. I'd just like to know, do we have any other state have the same collective, the child care collective bargaining, and if we have, what state do they have?
Yes, collective bargaining is already in statute in Illinois and in Washington State, and there are a number of other states that are in a similar situation where we are, where it's being considered and sort of on track. Those include, it is up for debate in Massachusetts, in Maryland, in Iowa. I may have missed a few, but it's already in statute in Illinois and Washington, so we wouldn't be, unfortunately, we wouldn't be breaking brand new ground, but we would be at the forefront.
Okay, follow up.
Please.
Yeah. I just want to thank you what you are doing. What you are doing is very important jobs in the state, and taking care of the toddlers, you know, preschool children and whatever. But you are on the pay while working very hard. So I think it's a timely, this is a good bill, and I'm willing to put my name on it to support it.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Representative Bolden.
Thank you, and I'm glad my name's on the bill. While we're having all this disclosure, I'm curious, do we have an idea what it would take in the budget to bring all the child care providers up to minimum wage? I mean, to me, this is just...
No, I mean,
we've got really important people here that are providing a service to keep families able to stay in our economy and work and make a living, and I'm just kind of curious what that number would be. I know it, you know, just something to look at, maybe.
It would be a tough number to generate, partly because since the state doesn't track how many children, the licensed and certified providers whom Ken talked about are able to take care of more children. And so they often take care of as many as 10 to 16 children at once. They also sometimes have more than one staff person working at a time because of the number of kids that are there. For our folks, because they're licensed exempt, it's a fewer number. And so we could generate a number of what it would cost to get everybody, if they took care of three kids at a time, to minimum wage. As I said, the agreement that we, the tentative agreement that will go into effect if funded by the legislature, gets you to $7.92 if you're in Portland and if you care for three toddlers. It doesn't get there for others. I suspect that we could generate the numbers of what it would take to get there, but it would be more. It would obviously be more than $35 million in the governor's recommended budget. We'd be happy to do our best to, using the available data, crunch the numbers for that. That would still leave people who take care of only fewer than three children below minimum wage, but we could at least do it for the three-kid max.
I'd like to get that information. That would be...
We'll absolutely
something that would be useful anyway.
That'd be great.
Additional questions? Not seeing any. Leslie, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
And I am going to temporarily recess the public hearing on House Bill 3181 and try and accommodate the schedules. Folks, audience, if you'll please excuse us, we have reps who are trying to testify on other bills. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2810 and call up Representatives Kotek and Flores, please. Good morning again.
Good morning. Welcome. Again, Mr. Chair. Glad you're feeling better.
So
members of the committee. For the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm State Representative for House District 51. And Representative Kotek and I appeared before you a couple weeks ago in regard to House Bill 2810, which deals with removing a sunset for the child care tax credit. And after some discussion and expressing the expressed concerns of some members of the committee, we have before you, I do believe that you have dash one amendments, which rather than completely eliminating that sunset, do insert a 20-year time frame. So as I understand it, that met with approval of the members who had the gravest concerns, and we would just like to encourage moving this to a work session, adopting the dash one amendments, and moving the bill forward. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Representative. And for the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. Just want to say I'm supportive of the 20-year range on that tax credit. I think it solves some of the issue around predictability for as the investment credit, but also provides a mechanism for review, and would just urge you to support that amendment and pass both 2810 and 2811 on to revenue as soon as you can. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Not seeing any. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your courtesy.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2810 and open a work session on the same bill. Yes, please, Representative Dahlem, and just a reminder, as Representative Kotek said, that this bill has a subsequent to revenue.
And we have to attach the amendment.
Yes.
Revenue 28-10 first.
Yes.
I move that we adopt the amendment to House Bill 2810.
Representative Dahlem moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 28-10. Is there any objection? Seeing none, hearing none, it's adopted. Representative Riley?
Mr. Chair, I move that we move this bill 2810 as amended by the dash one amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent to Ways and Means.
Representative Riley moves House Bill 2810 as amended.
I'm sorry. To revenue, not Ways and Means.
To as amended to revenue. Thank you. Yes, you got me confused there for a second.
Sorry.
Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Excused.
Representative Dahl.
Aye.
Representative Drug.
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Witt?
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 2810 is referred to revenue. Thank you very much.
Work's done. We just moved 2810 out.
Ah. Barnhart votes aye.
Yeah, without objection, suspend the rules to allow Representative Barnhart to vote on House Bill 2810. Seeing no objection, Representative Barnhart?
Votes aye.
Votes aye. We'll now close the hearing.
That's the one we just moved. No, we didn't just close the hearing. I think we're in it right now.
Mm-hmm. While we're in the work session mode,
yeah,
this should be fairly quick. Going to open a work session now on House Bill 2811. Ellen, if you'd please give us a brief review.
Thank you, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. 2811 is the companion bill to 2810, and it removes the annual limit on tax credit certificates that are issued for contributions to the child care division.
And committee members, again, by way of reminder, this has a subsequent referral to revenue.
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Vice Chair Riley.
I move that we move House Bill 2811 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to revenue.
Thank you. Vice Chair Riley moves House Bill 2811 to the floor with a due pass with a subsequent referral to revenue. Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnard?
Aye.
Representative Dowd?
Aye.
Representative Drug?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn?
Excused.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the bill is sent to revenue. And with that, we will get back to the main event. I'd like to reopen the hearing on House Bill 3181. And next up this morning, we have Marla Baker, Sybil Hildebrandt, and Portia May. If you'd please come forward. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. I will go first.
Okay.
That's fine. My name is Marla Baker, and I'm from Milwaukee, Oregon. I'm a
I'm a grandparent of six. I do childcare for four of them. And this is all really important to me. And I wasn't going to get emotional. This is really hard. I've been working on this for over a year. So getting to the end is pretty exciting. Things that are really important to us are the quality of the care that we give, the stability for all, not just for me, but for the kids. I don't know who else would do their daycare if we didn't do it. My kids work shift work, which allows me to be here this morning. They pretty much work till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning most of the time. I can care for four kids because they're siblings, which is really important. Also, a voice on the job. We're out here alone. We have nobody that we can talk to except for us, you know, when we get together once a month. We can't call DHS and get answers to questions that we have. They just tell us that we're self-employed, and they can't tell us how to run our business, and which is kind of frustrating. The stress on every level. If I can't pay my utility bill, my grandchildren, that stress trickles down to them. Unfortunately, it's hard to not worry about things like that and have them feel it. You know, my 3-year-old granddaughter always says, "Are you worried about something?" I don't think she knows what she's talking about, but let me go through my notes real quick. I think that's really all I have to say. I just really want you to support the House Bill 3181. It's very important to us that we have bargaining rights so that we can move on. There's so many things that we can do. I know that we can increase our pay by getting more training, which is really hard to do because who would come and take care of the kids while I went for that training? And with us being a union, we can help each other out in those areas. One other thing I kind of wanted to... I do take care of four. I have two children that I take care of. So I was kind of jotting down some figures to help maybe answer some of your questions.
Thank you.
I have one daughter has a 3-year-old, okay? Her income, and the only reason I know this is because she left her bank up on the computer last night. And her paycheck that okay. automatically deposited into her account yesterday was $369, and that's for 2 weeks. So that equals, her take home is $738 a month. Her amount that I get from her is $348. That's what is going to reflect on my 1099. Her copay is $174 of that. So I actually get a check for $174, and I'm supposed to collect $174 from her. That's not going to happen on her $738 that she makes. My other daughter that has three children and is a single parent, she probably makes $8 an hour, I'm guessing. I've seen her bank. I think she probably makes about $1,300 a month because I know she doesn't make much more than minimum wage. Her copay is $304. The amount that I get is $604 for three kids. So $604 plus $174, that's how much money I get for full-time daycare that is way more than 40 hours a week. I usually have kids 12 hours a day, and sometimes more than that. And the weekends, they work the weekends. I don't get weekends off. So does that kind of answer your questions a little bit?
Thank you, Marla. Very much so.
Okay.
Hello. My name is Portia Moy, and I live in Northeast Portland. I'm glad to be here today to let you hear my testimony about my grandchildren. I have six grandchildren. I take care of four. And the ages is from 3 until 12 years old. I don't get paid for the 12-year-old. I only get paid for the other three. And it's an enjoyable job. I enjoy working with them. I enjoy watching them grow. I enjoy them doing the homework. Now, a lot of that homework I may not be able to do, but I try to do the best that I can. And with the training that the union is going to provide, I would like to see some courses in some of the, you know, the math that they do in school, so I'd be able to help them. Because I want my children to be the best. They have goals in life that they want to be doctors, lawyers, engineers, and I want to be a, play a part in their life to for them to achieve their goals. And the one thing I think about is in my life, there was somebody that pushed me and kept encouraging me to go. And I know there was somebody in your life that encouraged you to go on to succeed in what you are doing today. And it's, and it's an enjoyable job. I enjoy working with them. And another thing I would just like you to know, because of the employment-related daycare, that's ERDC program, is, you know, it's just striving for funds to, you know, to support the child care program. We're the highest in the country, Oregon, that with the copay, and we're the lowest paid. Now, I make $2.17 an hour, and that is under minimum wage. Cool. And, you know, that's hard to kind of survive on. You know, when you have, you don't have no medical. And even my daughter, she doesn't have medical for her kids. And it's kind of hard, you know, if the child gets sick, I'm worried about how they're going to be taken care of and how are they going to, with a lot of prayer, you know, they survive and everything. But it's really hard. And I'm here today for the grandmothers supporting our kids and everything. I just, we would like, with the child care providers, wants a voice. We would like to have a voice so we can get training, better wages, and health care. And today I'm here just to give that support. And with the union, we'll have that voice because the union will give us that. And if you vote on the collective bargaining, that's Bill 3188, we will receive that. And so I'm just here to speak for my other coworkers that weren't able to be here because they had to transport kids back and forth to school. And I'm here for that voice for them. And so I would like for you to vote on that bill, 3181.
Thank you very much.
And sure. Thank you for letting me have my little voice today.
Thank you for bringing it.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Sybil Hildebrand, and I'm from Albany, Oregon. And I was watching three little girls for a while at about a dollar. Well, the infant, it was $1.85, and for the other two, it was $1.65, because down in Albany, it's a lot cheaper than it is up towards this way. Until the three little girls ended up moving with their parents. They weren't grandchildren. They were from people that I got to go through with the DHS. So my situation was a little different. My grandchildren's all in their teens, so I don't have to watch them. But back in November, I ended up with open-heart surgery, so I couldn't watch any more kids, and right now I still really can't watch children right now because of my health. Well, I'm already on SSD myself anyway, so I get, you know, Social Security disability, plus, you know, I get Medicare, and that's what paid for my open-heart surgery. A lot of these women don't even have any kind of health care whatsoever. If they had to go through what I just went through, you know, I don't know what would happen to any of them, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of child care providers that just don't have this medical. And I've helped start this program a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, whenever it's been that we've been doing this. And that's why I'm not going to give up on it myself, just because I can't watch the kids. I still come to these meetings all the time. I come to lobby. I enjoy doing it all, actually. It's been a lot of fun. And so that's, you know, that's why we need the SEIU to be behind us, to help us to know, you know, to help us know what we're doing here, you know, in some ways. And so, you know, I do believe in what we're doing. And so if you would please, you know, help us pass the bill the House Bill 3181. You know, I'm sure we would all just love that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sybil. Questions or comments for any of our panel members here? Yes, Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief comment. Thank you very much for coming in and testifying. And I love that that you know it's so touching to you, and that you really care about your kids. And I hope we can help you. Thank you very much.
I want to thank each and every one of you very much for coming today. Certainly appreciate your comments.
Well, thank you for hearing us.
Yeah. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Faye Zapita and David Morris, please. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to? Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and all the professionals in the room. My name is David Morris. I am a certified child care provider in the state of Oregon. I've been doing child care for 8 years. I'm kind of a rarity because I am a male in a predominantly woman profession. Most men in the business are there because they're helping their wives. However, I started this business myself. Back in 1986, I began working at the shipyard, Portland Ship Repair Yard. And you know, I found out that when I worked hard and when I did what I was supposed to do, the day went by faster. So while people were hiding in the different cubbyholes in the ship, I was working hard. And because of that, within 6 months, I found myself as a lead man, working under the foreman. Inside of a year, I became foreman, which is very rare. And my wife began to work for the shipyard. And one of our supervisors one day inappropriately touched her before some witnesses. And when she complained, that ended my employment and hers. And that was my first experience with a organized union. They came in and they flew an attorney in from California. Because of I was mistreated, I got some monetary damages as well as, you know, I was compensated. However, the company filed Chapter 11. Because of what I vowed against them, and they disappeared and went to Mexico, and that ended my employment at the shipyard. I began to work construction, but because I was a new construction worker and I didn't really know all of that job, I began to get laid off real often. And while I was laid off, my wife and I both was foster parents, and we ended up adopting 4 infants. And those infants, while we were working, we were paying daycare for them. And so while I was laid off, I began to stay home with our infants and provide child care for them. And then I just thought about it. And I said, well, hey, I started taking it. I went to the state and I got registered. And then I began to do training. I started taking in other kids. And that was back in 1998, approximately. So I've been doing this for a while, and so when I was approached by AFSCME, they took me down to the coast, and they wined me, and they dined me, and they did that, and, you know, I knew how important how it is to have some backing to belong to a group, and so I was very excited. We, the child care providers there, whom was not a part of their union, was embraced by all the members that was there from the other organizations whom the union is through. My wife, as of October last year, she quit her job. She began to work for me. as well as two other part-time employees. I said that to let you know that we as child care providers, some of us do get to that point where we are professionals. I pay workman's compensation insurance. I do all that. I abide by the minimum wage laws of the state. Business identification number, employees identification number. I have a structured curriculum for my preschool kids as well as my infant. Fortunate to have enough room where they each have the areas. And what I would like to see is for all the child care providers in our state to get to where I am. And, you know, I'm very proud of what I have accomplished. Some folk need help. I have had some problems with the state. Fortunately, you know, I sat down and with them and their superiors, and my problems went away because those who brought the problems to me, they weren't right. They weren't treating me fair. And so I was able to overcome that. But there's some people that won't be able to overcome these situations, and they're going to need the strong backing of a union. And the union is going to have a voice in able to help them. So we ask you to pass this bill today to give us a voice. You know, when I think of a union, I think of just uniting together. I know it's strength in numbers. And when I think of strength, I think of a muscle, you know, just being strong. And I researched the word muscle. You know, I found out that a muscle is not a single cell in itself, but it is a bunch of cells bundled together. And if we all bundle ourselves together, this committee, asking me in the child care world, you know what we can do for our children? They do. They need us. And that's what it's all about. It's about the children. So I ask you to please, please consider this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, my name is Faye Zepeda. I've worked in the child care world for about 21 years. I was a family child care provider, a registered family child care provider for 15 years. I currently work for AFSCME as an organizer and as a rep for the registered and certified family child care providers. I chose to work for AFSCME because I saw this as the only way to really make change for the child care profession, to make positive change in the system. Providers need this right to collective bargaining in statute so it's guaranteed, so it can't be taken away by a future governor. Lots of what I was going to say, other people have said, so let me check my notes real quick. You know, the state regulates how many children a provider can have in care. The state sets the amount that the providers are paid who, you know, receive subsidy. Take low-income children, and it really, you know, limits the amount of money a provider can make. And a lot of providers are single parents themselves. I was a single parent, three children, and I was able to support my family, but we had no health insurance. I had no retirement, you know, so it's really important to have this right and to have a voice in decisions that are made about the regulations, and not to weaken regulations, but to make sure they're reasonable regulations that providers can stay in compliance with, and that rates for the subsidy payments are at a rate where providers can stay in the field. We lose so many qualified providers because they aren't being paid enough and they don't have the benefits and they leave. Children need the consistency of care, you know, so it's really important to get the system stabilized. So, you know, I just want to ask you, support House Bill 3181, send a loud message to Oregon that child care is important. It's important to the Oregon workforce and for our future workers, the children that are in care that need the stable care and the consistent caregivers in their lives so that they will be productive in their futures. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Representative Dahlem.
Yes. David, my question is for you. As a registered child care provider, Is there a limit on the number of children you can have in your daycare?
Yes, sir. Actually, I'm a certified provider, and I can have 15 children.
15, and then with the 15 children, you have to have a certain play area, and you have to have snacks. And for every 3 children under 4, you got to have one helper, and every 5 children over 8, those are that's the qualification.
Correct, sir.
And so when, and just a general, and I know they're broken down by ages, but if you bring a child into your organization, what percentage does the state reimburse?
Again, that depends on the income of the parent. It varies. So that's, an example. I don't know the parent income, but there are some parents that some have a $200 a month copay.
And then what does the state pay?
$200-something.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And with an addition to that, in order for me to offer the care that I give, I need to have also some overages that the parent is responsible to pay me, along with what the state
snacks pays. And things like that, I suppose.
Well, no, it's in order for me, because see, what's not being shown here is that you mentioned it, but it's not really being shown on paper unless you go into the rule book, that certain amount of kids require a certain amount of supervision. Mm-hmm. And I have to pay that supervision. So in order to pay that supervision, I have to charge more than what the state would pay. So it may be an additional, the state's pay what the parent would pay to make. See, let's say, for instance, the state is paying $400. And the child is on a state subsidy. That $400, $200 would come from the state, $200 would come from the parent. In order for me to function at the capacity that I do, I would have to charge the parent, let's just say, another $50 in order to pay state to help me. In order to abide by the laws of the state.
Sure. I think I understand your operation better than I do the grandma's, Marla, and person that we heard from. You're not in a position where you can say to your customers, I will forgive your portion of the payment. You have to have theirs, you have to have the state's, and maybe even a little more.
Sir, I do it all the time. I forgive all the time. All the time. I have a stack of people whom some of it's outdated, but whom I was going to legally go after for money that was owed to me. But, I just let it go. It happens all the time. And considering that here's a husband and a wife, a two-parent family comes in, and they may depart from each other any time. That husband's certainly gone down the road. And then here's that. The mother is left there to foot the bill. Well, I have to understand that.
Sure. Thank you very much, David.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chair, it sounds as though you're in business.
I'm in business.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar.
And that's why I like to see all the child care. I started with my own children. So the grandmothers that testify here today, they are needed. They're needed. They don't have to be there with just their grandkids. With the proper funding, proper training, and the proper backing, they can move forward.
Additional questions? Not seeing any. Thank you both so very, very much. We certainly appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience today that would like to testify on House Bill 3181? Please.
Good morning. Hi, my name is Becky Wright, and I'm a little nervous. I'm a child care provider, exempt. And I live here in Salem. And I'm here in support of House Bill 3181 because I feel that we should have a voice over our work on this, and I believe this because we've only had a 3 cent raise in 4 years. And I now make $1.68 an hour, and I used to work at a job that I had to quit in 2005 when I was making over $8 an hour to watch my youngest nephew to go down to $1.68 to watch him full time for my sister. And I did that because I loved him, and I felt that, you know, she didn't have anybody else to watch him. She couldn't trust anybody else but me. And so I've been doing this since about 2003. And I really urge you to give us the bargaining rights that cannot be taken away from us. And I, you know, am really in support of this. That's about all I have to say.
Becky, thank you very much. And I apologize, too. I skipped over your name here on the sign-up
sheet. That's okay.
And you're right here, and I skipped over you.
That's
so
okay.
My apologies.
Thank you.
Please.
Good morning. I'm Mabel Rush. I live in Northeast Portland, and I'm a daycare provider for my great-grandson. His mother works in the evening from 4 to 12:30, and he's 2 and a half. He's very active and kind of a little bit over the top with, you know, getting into trouble. But my granddaughter doesn't make that much money. I think she makes minimum wage. And she has to pay me $42 a month. And she just can't do it. And that's why we need this bill. So maybe that copay will be dropped. And maybe we could get a little more than 10 to 12 an hour.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Holden.
I just want to make a comment short to the point, and I think you summed it all up right there. You know, it's you know, it just makes you feel like, you know, we really need to do something to take care of our children. So my heart goes out to all of you for all you do, and I hope we can figure out how to bring this whole situation around to where people are able to make a decent living and have some dignity and really provide a great place for their children to grow up. So thanks for all you do.
Thank you. And before you leave, I'd just like to thank you and everyone else that worked so hard to make sure that children get adequate care while their parents are away. You make it possible for other people to go to work who would be stuck in a position where potentially they wouldn't be able to keep their job. So you make that possible. And we certainly want to make sure to the extent that's possible that you too are able to earn a decent living and are adequately compensated for all of your hard efforts. I know that many, many years ago, my wife ran a daycare, and she worked very, very, very hard. And unless you've been there and watched what goes on, the hours are endless. And I'd be willing to wager that not one of you has not seen the occasion many times, probably, where a parent has been held up at their workplace and are unable to get back to pick up their kids in a timely fashion. And as a result, you end up working several days longer that day too. So thank you very much for everything that you do.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to testify today on House Bill 3181? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 3181. Any other business to come before our committee today? Not seeing any of that either. Ellen, would you please give us a brief summary of what we're going to have on tap for Friday?
Thank you, Chair Witt. Members of the committee, on Friday, April 6th at 8 a.m. in Hearing Room C, you all will be having your first public hearing on House Bill 2732, which modifies the definition of a disabled individual for the purposes of public contracting law. And you'll also be hearing House Bill 2842, which establishes the Commission for the Products of Disabled Individuals.
Thank you very much. And with that, we stand adjourned until Friday. Thank you.
could be you.